Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I am Zach Moore, and I am joined by Mike Cross. What's up, Mike?
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, Cross was on X-Ray in season one. He was on a couple episodes.
I was.
Then as well. But so this is this spiritual sequel to X-Ray. Well, not even spirit. It truly is the sequel to X-Ray.
Well, and it kind of ties into the last episode I was on, which was, I believe, Red?
I guess so, in a way.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. We've been on this theme about, you know, Smallville was in the 90s, and they were released on VHS, like which episodes they would pair together.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, kids, before streaming and complete Blu-ray box sets, right, sometimes shows wouldn't come out with every single episode on home video. They'd have like a special collection, like Smallville Volume 4, and it'd have like four tapes of random episodes in the first four seasons. So if this truly came out on a VHS tape, the first episode on it would be X-Ray, and the second episode would be Visage, you know? And it makes sense, you know? And I want to... Since we've got on this line of discussion, this all comes from Tyler Patrick, who was on Ryan with me, where obviously Stray would be the first episode and Ryan would be the second episode if those were on a VHS tape.
Yeah.
But I want to like find one of these people online that make custom like VHS covers and and make some now. It's just kind of a fun thing now, so I'll think about that. But yeah, so this episode sees the return of two characters from Smallville. Well, or does it? Well, technically, yes. We're all about spoilers here, if you haven't figured it out yet, on Always Hold On Smallville. So, yes, Whitney comes back, but he doesn't really come back, although we do end up seeing him in the teaser.
And
here's what Al Goff had to say about this episode. Of course, this quote coming from Smallville, the official companion season 2, available wherever books are sold, by Paul Simpson, of course. We were thinking of killing Whitney off at the end of season 1, but thought it wasn't such a good idea, and liked the notion of him going off to war. But then in season 2, we didn't want to have Whitney hanging out there. We also liked Tina Greer, the morphing girl from X-Ray. Yeah, we know Al. We know who it is now. So we combined the two storylines. You actually see Whitney die in the teaser, but you don't know he's dead until the end after you've gone through all this. And then, you know, as far as Lizzie Kaplan, because obviously she played Tina Greer
in
season 1, she became a bigger star as the years have gone on. She's probably one of the most recognizable Smallville guest stars today. But the show she was in at this time, during season 2 of Smallville, was The Pitts, and that was a sitcom. I think it only lasted 1 year, but she was like the teenage daughter on that show. So they had a lot of scheduling conflicts with her. And if you know, once you realize this and you realize how little... availability she had,
yeah,
you can kind of see in the episode that, you know, she's really barely in it as herself, and this is what producer director Greg Beeman had to say about that, once again quoting the companion. It was quite frustrating because Lizzie Kaplan wasn't available, as she was a regular on a sitcom, The Pitts. We shot the whole show without her, and then 2 weeks later went back and shot all of her scenes in 2 days. So that was...
I don't know if you can really tell. Can you tell?
No, you can't tell, but I can see it now that I know that information. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay. Like, whenever they cut back to her, like, in certain shots, it's like this really tight one shot of her.
Yeah, probably green screened.
That allows us to see more of, you know, Eric Johnson as Whitney Fordman, because that's the main person that Tina is impersonating this whole episode. You know, it was good to see Whitney again, although I don't know. Like, do you think they should have combined these stories? Of like, would you like to see Whitney truly return to Smallville and deal with that? Or were you happy with the way they handled it here?
No, I think they deserve, or his character at least, deserved a little bit more fleshing out of what happened to him, other than, you know, a quick I don't know what you would call it, an opener.
The teaser. Yeah.
Yeah. It seemed like his character deserved a little bit more since he was a regular in season 1. So, what was the reason that they wrote him off? Was he involved with another show?
He was, of course, the obstacle boyfriend character, which all these shows have, right? They've gotten better as the shows have progressed. Obviously, on Arrow, it was Tommy Merlin, who ended up being a great character in his one-season arc. And then Eddie Thawne in The Flash, who ended up being an even better character in his one-season arc. So
one season, yeah.
And I think with Whitney, like, I don't think he knew. Like, I think it was a surprise to him. You know, because I think he even said somewhere in one of these Smallville companions that he knew that his character had a short shelf life, you know, since he was the boyfriend. I mean, he probably thought it wouldn't just be 1 year, because I'm sure that's disappointing to an actor to be like, oh man, yeah, I signed up for this new show, the Superman show. It's gonna last like 5 years. It's great. I'm set, you know. And then they come to you at the end of season one. It's like, yeah, we've decided to go in a different direction. So, yeah. I get it. I like the change of cast members, but you're right. I feel like he wasn't underserved.
Just in retrospect, that you had this guy that had been fleshed out over a whole season, and they essentially bring him back for just a teaser, and they don't really they did something with the character, and they said spoiler alert, he dies. But I feel like, I don't know, I kind of feel like it was a wasted opportunity to do something a little bit more, but what do I know?
Yeah, what do you know? Do you write for television, Krause? How many scripts have you sold?
No, okay. I don't.
back to your corner. Yeah, you know, this actually is not the last appearance of Eric Johnson's Whitney on Smallville. You think it would be, but it's not. So we'll get to that a couple years from now. In the show, we'll see how long that takes in the podcast for us to get there. That's the setup. Those are the players here for this episode. Let's get into the episode proper discussion. Visage.
Clark, what's going on?
Look, I know this may sound crazy, but Whitney may not be Whitney.
Are you getting existential on us, or is this wall of weird material?
I think he's Tina Greer.
The mighty morphing power girl?
What?
The girl who was Lex and then Lana and then locked up?
No, I know who she is, but it's impossible.
Why, she was obsessed with Lana, remember? Maybe she escaped from the hospital to see her again. Who better to impersonate than Whitney?
Clark, there's no way that she could have pulled a Martin Gare.
Why not?
Because she's dead.
What?
She committed suicide last week. Emma's running a story on it on page 2.
What happened?
The authorities said that she went into the art therapy room in the psychiatric hospital, doused herself in paint thinner, and lit a match.
Okay. Now that's nasty.
I know. Tina wrote a note saying that she just didn't know who she was anymore. She couldn't take it.
Did they ID her dental records?
Visage is the 11th episode of Smallville's second season. It aired on January 14th, 2003. It was written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer and directed by William Gregerty. So this episode starts out with Clark helping Lana with some plumbing. Huh? How about that?
Yeah, baby.
He's on this white t-shirt and he gets sprayed with water. And it's like, you know, Tom Welling's in good shape, and the shirt kind of is clinging to his body, right? And Lana like checks him out, gives him the good side eye. You know, there's good side eye and bad side eye. Is there not? Yeah, that was like, what kind of show am I watching here? It's a little uncomfortable. It is kind of funny though, because he's like, hey, can you go get a wrench? And she goes off to get a tool, and then he uses his heat vision to fix the problem. I hope no one else ever has to fix that pipe, because that's welded
this
in.
This is welded together. This should not be like this.
Excuse me, Miss Lang, did you use a blowtorch on this?
This is not up to code. No. We're shutting this place down.
Exactly. But in what is the weakest segue ever, she goes to, okay, well, Clark has fixed the problem. So she goes to put the wrench back in a drawer, right? And in that same drawer, there's this photo spread of Whitney's marine photo shoot and his fatigues, right? It's like, why is this drawer here? Like, I know they had to get there, right? I guess they wanted to remind you who Whitney was. But couldn't Clark have just asked? Because obviously in the last episode, the cliffhanger, I mean, if you want to call it that, was Whitney had come to the loft and told Clark that Whitney. See, Whitney's a girl's name. That's why I get confused. But Lana had come to the loft and told Clark that Whitney was missing in action, right? And so obviously this is the next episode, so you're going to want some follow-up on that. So Clark just could ask her, hey, so have you heard anything about Whitney? And then she's just gone into it. But I feel like they wanted to, again, this is a different time in television, right? They think people might have forgotten who Whitney was.
Yeah.
See, like Arrow and The Flash and all those shows today, there's always like a 30-second previously on Arrow or previously on The Flash, and they like would catch you up on that kind of stuff. So if they did that in the Smallville days, they would have previously on Smallville. They would have Whitney like beating Clark up, time in the field, Whitney deciding to join the Marines, him leaving, you know, him Lana giving him the necklace. You'd see all these essential elements, and then they wouldn't feel the need to spell this out. But in this day and age, back in the early 2000s, you know, you only got the previously on Smallville when it was a true two-parter, right? When it was like a cliffhanger, season finale, season premiere, something like that. I'm pretty sure that's why they do it, but I just found it ridiculous that she has these pictures of him in like the tool drawer, right?
Remember him?
Yeah, exactly. But do you know what else she has in there? She has the kryptonite necklace.
Oh yeah.
And Clark's like, "Are you gonna start wearing that again?" <It's> like, very very subtle, Clark. That made me laugh because she had given it to Whitney when he left in season one, and they had sent back all his personal effects to his mother. When he was declared missing in action, which they seem like they did that pretty fast, right? I mean,
they did.
You don't even got. I don't know how it works in the military, but it's like, man, if you're missing for more than a month, they ship your stuff out of there. So, so then we get, you know, we go back to the picture again, and we use that as a transitional thing to go to Indonesia, which, you know, Cross. I mean, I remember 2003. I don't know about you, but were we involved in any? Were we involved in any military operations in Indonesia in 2003?
Well, when I was watching this, I just thought, I don't know when they filmed this. Do you know when they filmed this?
Well, it would have been late 2002.
Late 2002, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just the timing that this episode aired, it aired in January, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Of 2003, which 2 months later, we were in a full-on war in Iraq.
Right.
Which I found it interesting that the timing of this was just 2 months off.
Well, I feel like they were trying to avoid like current events. Like, let's just, Indonesia sounds pretty safe. Let's just send him over there, right?
But can you imagine if this was later on in the production slate and it ended up airing in March? Which, you know, for them, I'm sure it's just a few episodes because I'm sure they had a break at some point.
Yeah, they go on a couple of breaks and, you know, they go on their big winter hiatus and they go on like a spring break as well.
Right.
It's like,
can you imagine it's right when they came back and we're in full-on war and they're having this big episode with a returning soldier with PTSD or whatnot? That would have ruffled some feathers.
Yeah, because even that, they do make that an element of the story here because everybody thinks, you know, Whitney's been through a lot and he might have PTSD. And yeah, that is true. I think, yeah, it was written, I'm not going to say it's a pre-9/11 society, but it's almost kind of that way, right? Where it's like just innocent fiction of military. It's like, no. The general public now has a lot better understanding of all this stuff, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I do like the way this is shot. It's shot a lot like Saving Private Ryan. It's very gritty. There's like high shutter speed. It's very visceral, right? So it's a different approach to like your normal. You feel like you're in a different place than Smallville. So I thought that was a good bit of direction there. But then Whitney is talking to his troop, and he's like, "We're gonna get home, and we're gonna see Lana." And the guys are like, "Yeah, Lana." So obviously he'd been talking about her. You know, they start to come under heavy fire, and his guys start getting shot down. One guy gets shot in like the river, and Whitney goes back for him and starts carrying him over the ridge or whatever it is. And then we see a big explosion in front of their face, and it's like boom, opening credits, right? So that's it. And in retrospect, now this is the last time we truly see Whitney. Now, back in the day, I used to, as I've said many times, I used to go on Krypton site, and I used to like be a big spoiler junkie. Like seasons 2 and 3 and 4, like I was like reading Smallville spoilers like all the time. And there was a subplot here in the spoilers that was like, while all the stuff was going on in Smallville, we were going to be cutting back to Whitney, and he was going to be like trying to get back home and all this. So that's why the end of the episode here was such a gut punch to me, because all this time I'm like, no, I read the spoilers, Whitney's fine. He's just being impersonated, but he's not being replaced, right? He truly is missing in action, and we'll get to see him at the end of the episode. So I'm watching this whole episode, I'm thinking, oh yeah, there was an explosion, that's just to throw us off, right? We'll see that he's okay at the end. And apparently not. Obviously he's really dead. And I don't know, I talked to Craig Byrne about this, and he was like, yeah, they might have, I don't know, like, it was so long ago, nobody really remembers. Maybe that was an early draft. You know, maybe they really did plan to not kill him off. I think that's probably what it was, because that's usually when spoilers leak out, right? You know, early drafts. I don't know who leaks these scripts out. But anyway, come back to Smallville High School here. And Clark is awkwardly – well, see, there had been, like, romantic tension, obviously, like we were talking about in that first scene with the pipe, right? I'm sure there's some symbolism there, right? I don't know. but Clark awkwardly asked Lana to hang out at the winter festival in Granville, which I love how they always reference Granville. It's like their big sister town or something. You know, we've all been there, right? It's like, got this thing going on. You want to come hang out? You know, hey. Okay, but again, Smallville with the continuity, right? Not 3 episodes ago, he told Chloe and her, like, you want to just be friends? Let's be friends. Walked out, dropped the mic, and was very satisfied with himself, right? And then 1 episode ago, he lost the girl who he thought was going to be a soulmate.
Yeah.
This is a symptom of episodic television, okay? They don't expect you to remember things. They don't want you to remember things from, like, 1 or 2 episodes ago, right? I'm not saying that he needs to be depressed all this whole episode because, you know, his girlfriend just died. But, you know, it is established some time has passed between Skinwalker and this. I think Lana says, like, it'd been a month or something. But but still, I mean, he's getting over things pretty quick, I think.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. I'm so glad that this cliche of television back in the early 2000s is almost extinct now, because everyone's binge watching everything. It actually forces some kind of continuity. And back then it was like, you know, it's the episode of the week. You know, half the people will remember and half the people won't. And we'll just kind of pretend like it's, you know, kind of there, but not there. Looking back, I'm kind of glad that we're a little bit past this formula of television.
It's amnesia every week, right?
Right.
So, okay. So this scene here, right? This, it's like, to be honest, it's like a funny video on the internet, right? Like, have you seen, and I love this, I think a couple of comedians have done this online, and it makes me laugh. It's like when a girl you like calls you bro or dude, right? Or man or something. So, have you seen this? It's like a guy, he goes up to this girl. She's like, hey, bro. And then there's like a gunshot sound effect, and he flies backward. She's like, oh, dude, what's wrong? He gets like shot again. And it's like, oh my gosh. It's like, I love you. Like a brother. It's like, it's just like the personification of the emotions you feel when someone you like calls you that. It's like, clearly in the friend zone. But that's what this is like, because Clark has just asked Lana out on one of these like pseudo dates that we're all familiar with, right? And then he's like, oh, great. He's feeling pretty good about himself. But then everything goes to slow motion, right? And the sea of students in the hallway parts, right? And then Whitney, we'll call him Whitney for the sake of conversation, right? In full dress uniform, like strolls down the hallway.
An officer and a gentleman walks in.
We see his footsteps first, like the build up momentum. Her books drop in slow motion, right? She runs into his arms, right? And literally, you know that song where it's like, you know. That's what they need to cut into this. You could easily just put that into this. You all know the music I'm talking about, right? The whole running to each other in a field music, right? And I get it. It's the soldier coming home, and that's what you do. But, man, you got to feel so bad for Clark here.
Well, I felt awkward, though. It's like there's this soldier coming back fighting for the country in Indonesia, which, you know, who knows what the hell is going on over there. Once again, this was in January of 2003, so it's not like, you know, America had a lot of soldiers off fighting in war at that point, even though they were about to. But now looking back, it's like, you know, if I saw a television show see a guy try to go after a soldier's girlfriend while he's off fighting, I don't think a TV show would do that.
But you forget they're broken up at this point, which I think
they are. Yeah.
But this episode really doesn't lead you to believe that, right? Even the trailer, even the trailer for it's like Lana's boyfriend returns. I'm like, well, but they broke up.
I don't know what I'm supposed to feel.
Yeah, it's weird. It's hard to just separate it from, because we live in we're in a constant war right now, right? So whenever you see soldiers, it's a big deal when they come home. And yeah, it's hard. This is from a simpler time, a more innocent time, Krause.
No kidding.
But so they embrace, and then they, you know, they have their moment, and then it's kind of like after Han shoots Greedo in the cantina, and everybody just.
Wait, how are you tying this into that?
Well, I'm just saying, like, everything goes back to business, right? People, like, they stop for a moment, and then they're like, oh, better get back to class, right?
Well done comparison, sir.
But then I love how Clark is just standing there with that pile of books, you know?
Oh, yeah, and he just walks off like...
If he had picked up those books, I'm like, man, that's the ultimate friend zone. So at least you have some... at least you have some self-respect, Clark, like...
That's funny. I thought the same thing too. It was like, good for Clark. He's got at least a little bit of self-respect.
Now I will say this: as much as we're making fun of this, right? If this was really Whitney, I would complain. I guess it sounds like we're complaining. We're having fun reminiscing about it. But because it's Tina Greer, right? Spoilers. It's been established, people. All right. Because it's her, it's like staged and over the top, and I buy it, right? Because that's what she's going for here, right? It's not really Whitney coming back. So
agreed.
That's why it doesn't, like, if that was really Whitney, I'd be like, are you kidding me, man? You're just going to show up at high school in your dress uniform, which, by the way, where'd she get this dress uniform? Like the military outlet store, right? They sell those. But we cut to the Kent farm, and Clark's talking to his parents about it. You know, I get how he's being honest with his parents. He's like, yeah, no, I don't know how I feel about this. Seeing them together again, and, you know, and turns out that they're going to throw a big party for a coming home party for Whitney at the Talon, right? And Jonathan says, well, you're going, right? And Clark's like, I don't know. And then Jonathan, this is so in character for Jonathan Kent. I love it. He says to Clark, you need to put your personal feelings aside, son. Whitney risked his life for this country, and he just deserves a hero's welcome. That is so in character. It's hilarious, right? I love how they had Jonathan say that to him, right? Before we get to the party, though, we have a scene with Whitney and Lana at his house, and his mom's all excited, and she's baking cookies. You know, she's really excited that Whitney's home, and she says, my son and the prettiest girl in school together again, and she walks off, and obviously Whitney did not write home to his mom and tell him that Lana had broken up with him, but if I was in his situation, I wouldn't have either, right? I would have hoped, okay, I'm gonna be out here for a few years, we'll get this resolved by the time I get home.
Yeah.
Mom never needs to know. Yeah. So Whitney here, he tries to kiss Lana, and she pulls away, and he's all confused, and she mentions the video letter that she had sent to Whitney, and he's like, video letter? Well, when I was hit by this explosion, suffered some memory loss, and this is a lie.
Yeah.
Of course. So it's not a plus one for amnesia. This doesn't count for amnesia count because it doesn't really have it, okay? But it is a very good cover story, both in the story, right, to Lana, and then to us as the audience, right? If they're really trying to throw you off, because we saw him in an explosion, you could have thought, oh, well, maybe that... Because there, like you said, Krauss, there is like a thread of possible PTSD here. I feel like they played it all wrong because I don't remember, I'm mixing the spoilers I read and the trailers I saw, but I feel like people knew that this was going to be not Whitney, but maybe they did. I don't know.
Did they?
I don't know. But that's sort of the problem with me reading spoilers. I can't experience things like you're supposed to. Right?
I remember watching it for the first time, and granted, I didn't see all the previews or TV teasers. And I remember being thrown for a loop once it was revealed that it was Tina.
Well, there's probably a lot of reasons that threw you for a loop, but we can get into that when we finally see her. Anyway, we have our Lex Luthor subplot here, and his new girlfriend, Dr. Helen Bryce, is late for a date, and she comes to the Luthor mansion and apologizes for being late, and Lex doesn't say anything to her. He just throws some pictures at her, and it's some pictures of her talking to Lionel. And I had completely forgotten about this plot line, the subplot with Helen here. Where there was suspicion of her working with Lionel from pretty much the beginning, because this is her second episode. It's established later when Clark and Lex are talking about it that they have been dating for a while, because some time has passed in the last couple episodes. In retrospect, it does make Helen's completely out of left field character turn at the beginning of season 3 not so completely out of left field, I guess.
True.
Because I guess, see, in this episode, it's supposed to be like a lesson for Lex to learn to trust people. Although, in retrospect, no, he was right all along.
Yeah.
But apparently, he calls her out for Luthor Corp wiring her money. She stands up for herself pretty well, but she still doesn't answer any of the questions, like the pictures, the money. She offers no explanation, and then she just leaves. So, we're supposed to be on her side, but yeah, I'm kind of on Lex's side on this. Give me some kind of explanation, right?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. You're not sure what you're supposed to, who you're supposed to kind of feel sympathy for.
Well, then we get our next scene with Lana and Chloe. They're talking about getting ready for the party and Whitney's coming home party, and of course, Smallville being Smallville, it has to have this kind of dialogue, right? Chloe's like, hey, you and Whitney, huh? And Lana's like, the thing with Whitney is what you see is what you get. There are no mysteries, no deep dark secrets, Hashtag irony, right? Because that's
right.
The whole point of this episode. So then we get to see the party, and it's a welcome home party at the Talon. I guess they had to settle for the Anthem by Good Charlotte, which is a great song, but they couldn't get a live band like they did a few episodes ago for Ryan when Ryan came home to Smallville. So you're telling me this kid the Kents adopted for a week they can get a live band for, but this American hero, captain of the football team, family lives in Smallville. Here's a Good Charlotte CD, we'll play that. But anyway, so there are some red flags here that this might not be Whitney. Because he deflects conversation, because Pete comes up to talk to him. He's like, oh, man, I've been taking the sharp games. You can keep it up with the season? He's like, no, I don't, not really into football anymore, man. He's like, oh, okay. And then Chloe's like, oh, you don't want to interview for the torch? And when he's like, nah, I don't remember much. And what I do remember, I don't want to talk about. So he's like just turning people down left and right. But then, Clark comes to welcome him back. And it doesn't go well.
No, it does not.
It's interesting. You know, if people had missed, like, the last couple episodes of season one for whatever reason, they probably would have thought, well, this is perfectly in character, right? But Clark and Clark and Whitney really do patch things up, you know, at the end. I love that last scene they had together in Tempest. You know, they kind of came to an understanding about things. And they left in a good place, you know. And
now they're right back to where they were halfway through season one.
This could have been, yeah, early season one, totally. So that doesn't go well. And then Clark and Lana are talking about, you know, Whitney, I think the football team comes over and says hello to him or something. But then Clark and Lana are like, oh, yeah, about Saturday. Yeah, let's cancel. I understand, you know. But Whitney overhears this and he gets jealous, right? And he goes off on Clark and then storms off. And then Clark goes to follow him in the bathroom. Yeah. This episode, this is one of the episodes I remember most fondly out of all of Smallville, right? Because there's certain lines of dialogue that me and my circle of friends would repeat all the time, right?
The bathroom scene.
Well, yeah, well, this one where he's like looking in the mirror, he's like, how could I have been so stupid? And so, like, I just, the way he says that, it's so funny. I don't know why it latched on to me, but I always say that, how could I be so stupid? You know, so he's talking to himself and you're like, what are you talking about? And, you know, of course we understand later what he is referring to. But then, you know, Clark follows him in the bathroom and finds him raging out. And he, like, rips a door off a door frame and throws it across the room, right?
And I love it because it reminded me of the old school Incredible Hulk TV show with Bill Bixby. When he throws the door at Clark, it's just this a little bit slower motion. And you just kind of – I just had a flashback to, like, you know, Lou Ferrigno in green makeup throwing, like, you know, doors or whatnot in slow motion, just kind of hulking out. I loved it. I loved it. I know it was a little bit cheesy, but I thought it was great.
If he hadn't, like, yelled while he was doing it, maybe it would have been less cheesy.
Right.
But you're right. That's a good callback on the Hulk. That's what really makes it feel like the Hulk. The slightly slow motion is very 70s, isn't it? Oh, man. Clark says, how'd you do that to the door? And Whitney says, I'm a trained U.S. Marine, Clark. There's a lot of things I could do. Ooh. this one, he says, stay away from Lana. And he says that a couple times in this episode. And this is something, this and one other particular line of dialogue in this episode. So me and my friend Steve Simon just, like, yell at each other all the time during marching band. I don't know why we started doing this. But I'd be like, and, like, Steve would, like, go up to me and say, stay away from Lana, and just nudge me. And then I would go, like, flying across the room. Like, it's just so stupid. But anyway, so yeah, Whitney has trashed the bathroom here. I guess at this point, Clark leaves the party and doesn't talk to anyone anymore because we cut to, like, the next day at school, and Clark goes to talk to Lana at, like, her locker about this, about, you know, this conversation with Whitney. And apparently when Lana tells Clark is, oh, I was wondering when you were going to talk to me. Whitney told me how you ripped apart the bathroom in a jealous rage.
You know, no. She says Whitney told her that Clark tore up the bathroom, which if someone told me someone tore up the bathroom, I would have a completely different image of what they were doing in there. But she says, Whitney told me you were tearing up the bathroom, Clark. Like Clark's in there because there was bad queso at the welcome home party or something. You know?
That's where that explains where you went the rest of the party. Oh, man, that's funny. No, I mean literally tearing up the bathroom, Lana.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I think at this point, like, there have been enough red flags, but now you're like, okay, well, this has gone, like, too far. Now Whitney has, like, completely lied about this situation and made Clark look like he's the one at fault here. So then we cut to the Fordman house. Lieutenant McNulty, remember that name, because it comes into play next season, right? He comes to see Miss Fordman, as we find out at the end of the episode, to tell her Whitney is dead. But guess what? He is, too, because because Whitney comes down with a baseball bat. He's like, hi, Lieutenant! And he just brutally kills him.
Yeah.
With a baseball bat and, like, blood, like, flecks of blood go over his face, and the mom is freaking out, as you would be, right?
Yeah.
I feel so bad for his mom, by the way. She just lost her husband last year.
And now she watches this get murdered in front of her.
By who she thinks is her son, at least right now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is pretty brutal for, you know, 7 Central on the WB in 2003, I will say. I mean, it's not The Walking Dead, okay? But I'm just saying, we have blood flying on people's faces with the baseball bat murder. Extreme, right? So take that, Negan. Do you watch The Walking Dead?
Yes, I do.
I am the only person, I think, at all, who does not watch The Walking Dead. Like, I have not found one other person who has not, like, never watched an episode of The Walking Dead.
Well, I think it's a good show, but I don't love it as much as everyone else does. I think it's a little bit overrated.
But man, it's not The Walking Dead. It's not the zombies, man. The title's about the people, man. Because when they're dead, but they're walking. It's like they're existing, but they're not living, man. It's genius. Anyway, yeah, I get it. I think everything needed to be said about zombies was said with Shaun of the Dead. You know, I mean,
definitely.
I love Shaun of the Dead. I feel like the early 2000s was like the time for zombies, right? That's when we had the Dawn of the Dead remake from Zack Snyder, your favorite director.
Well, 28 Days Later was around that time,
that's
right?
Cillian Murphy, the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Zombies was the thing, but I feel like zombies is done. Like, just move on. Like,
yeah. Or maybe superheroes too, but we won't go there.
Touche, sir. Why to undercut my entire argument about the zombies? So we're sitting here talking about a superhero show from 15 years ago, talking about getting over it, man. What a hypocrite I am. I stand corrected. So Lieutenant McNulty is dead, and we go to commercial, and we cut back from commercial, and Whitney's hanging out with Lana as if nothing has happened. He's just hanging out with her at the horse stables, you know, and he's happy that Lana's wearing his necklace again. Which Whitney did not remember having. She mentions the fact that they sent it back. And he's like, sent back? And she's like, yeah, I gave it to you. And when you were missing in action, they sent your personal effects back. And he's like, oh, it's I can't believe I've forgotten so much. It's like, okay, man. But then he asks her to move in with her. And she says no. And he gets mad. He's like, it's all because of Clark. and then he's like, can we not talk about Clark? And it's just, this made me laugh because it's classic, like, when people are, like, obsessed about the wrong thing. Like, they brought it up and they're mad that you're talking about it. It's like, well, you brought it up, dude. Anyway, Lana is taking it easy on him because she's like, I know you've been through a lot. And this is that thread of the PTSD we're talking about here.
Yeah.
So he's, what, let's do some math real quick. He's 19, right? Like, if he was 18 last season, 19 now. And to be generous, she's 16, right?
To be generous.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, like I give
no,
them,
that's a good point.
I'm rounding up, I'm saying 15, 16, 17, 18, right? They all had July birthdays or something. I don't know, August birthdays. They're all old for their grade. I mean, 16, 19, I don't know what the rules are in Kansas. Do you have to, like, a parental permission slip or something down at the Justice of the Peace? I don't know.
I would hope at least.
But that fact comes up again a little later, too. So like, they are at least a little self-aware about it. But anyway, then we cut to Clark and Lex, and they're shooting pool, you know, just being bros, which is fun to see. Early Clark and Lex just getting along. You know, it's a good establishment, like I said earlier, that Clark mentions that Lex and Helen have been dating for a while. Of course, Lex drops this nugget of foreshadowing onto Clark. He says, people are seldom who they appear to be. It's like classic.
Oh, yeah.
Classic Smallville. Like, okay, well, this is what this episode is
wink,
about.
Wink.
Yeah. When it's not relentless Superman references, it's relentless references to, like, what the freak of the week is, right? Like in Dichotic, in the Jonathan Taylor Thomas episode, every scene was somebody saying, I wish there was two of me. Oh, can't be in two places at once. Oh, it's double the work, you know, whatever. But I love, and this is the last time we get this from Lexi. He continues to call Whitney the quarterback. He says, now that the quarterback's returned, you're back at your own one-yard line with Lana.
Ooh, yeah.
And then he says, be patient. Most quarterbacks' careers don't last that long. So Lex is on fire in this scene with the one-liners, right? But what he also does is he offers to help Whitney out. He tells Clark, hey, when after the hurricane, listen to me. I live in Houston, Texas, okay? After the tornado, it's hurricane season in Smallville. After the tornado in the you know, season finale, a lot of his workers went through, you know, PTSD, and they went to a specialist. When Alexis specialist in Metropolis, no doubt, I'm sure. Lex tells Clark about it, and Clark's like, oh, well, that'd be great, Lex. I appreciate that. So they think at this point when he's just, you know, he's not coping well from being back home, which is a logical assumption. Even in Smallville, you're not going to immediately assume, you know that shape-shifting girl from last season trying to kill Lana? I think she's back impersonating Lana's boyfriend. To what end? Okay, well, we'll talk about that. But
yeah.
Okay. But we cut back to the Forbin house, and now Whitney's mom is tied up. And this, my friends, is one of the most quotable lines in Smallville to me, and most absurd lines that you'll ever see in any movie or television show. He has his mom tied up here, and he yells at her. He says, what's my favorite radio station? it's the most absurd thing. And I swear, me and, like I said, my friend Steve Simons and Lance, you know, everybody, we always used to joke about this in band, like, what's my favorite radio station? Because it's the most...
God.
What other situation would someone say that to anyone,
no,
right?
No, imagine yelling that to someone now. They would be like, Spotify?
Pandora?
Pandora? Like, what's a radio station?
XM channel 175? I don't know. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, that is a funny line.
But it's just so absurd and over the top. So Clark breaks up this little interrogation because he knocks on the door. He duct tapes his mom's mouth. It's like, man, this poor woman. Again, this poor woman being traumatized. But this is a plus one for the blue shirt, red jacket. Yes. Clark is wearing his blue shirt, red jacket. And this is where I actually, like, watching the show, this in the next episode, because he wears it a couple episodes in a row, this is when I really started to realize what they were doing with that as the proto-Superman costume. What's your take on that? Do you like that?
And I like it. I like that they were using, you know, color schemes for Clark that were limited to blue, red, and yellow. But
I think they do it too much, though.
No, I definitely agree.
It's me having a counter on it.
I agree. No, I agree. Well, maybe this episode it kind of shoved it down your throat.
Well, the early season two, it's still fine because it's sporadic, right? Season two, season three. I feel like in season four, especially, and then season five onward to like season nine.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, from season five to season nine, like, he would wear that like every other episode.
Yeah.
And it's either
Eating
that
a
or,
dead horse.
It's either that or the reverse, the red shirt, blue jacket. And then that kind of became the bizarro costume when he was on. It's like he knew, like, to wear the opposite. it's just silly.
Yeah.
I don't know. They overdid it, is what I'm saying. So, too much of
a
good
thing. No,
I
definitely agree.
But here it's still fine. This is where Clark tells Whitney about the PTSD, and he's like, you're just trying to get in between me and Lana. He's like, look, man, this is not about me and Lana. I'm just trying to help you. And this is generally Clark being a good guy. He has no ulterior motive here. He thinks this guy's messed up from being in combat, and he's trying to help him out. Well, you know, if it was truly Whitney, right? But this is where he's just, stay away from Lana! And he just shoves him just a little bit, just taps him, and he goes flying across the lawn. And that's the thing that me and Steve would reenact at marching band all the time. I don't know why this started. I don't know if he started or if I started, but it was like, stay away from Lana! What's my favorite radio station? But Clark, he realizes, hey, this guy just super strength shoved me across this lawn. Maybe there's something up with him. So he x-rays him. And this should be like the big reveal that it's not Whitney, it's Tina Greer, right? Although, this is what confuses me so much. In X-Ray, the episode where Clark got his X-Ray vision, right? That's a huge plot point that Tina Greer has this skeleton with, like, green all in it because she was affected by the meteorox. She had a soft bone disease, and that's why she looks different. But it was established that that's the only difference. She just has green throughout her skeleton, right?
Right.
But here, it kind of looks like the Terminator endoskeleton, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like, this is a pre-existing special effect. Couldn't you just, like, go back into the files and... use the same one or something? Like, I was just confused. Like, did they misunderstand what her power was? Like, I think
they did.
It's an odd continuity error considering it's a special effect. Like, it would be so easy. You think they want to keep it as close to possible as it was last time because that would cost them less money to render, right? But they built a new, like, it's like this, that's the best thing I can describe. It's like a term, like if you x-rayed Metallo, that's what it would look like. We see, quote-unquote, Whitney continue to walk inside, and at this point, he morphs back into Tina Greer. This is the first time we've seen Lizzie Kaplan as the character in this episode. He tells Whitney's mom to shut up! And this is when, looking at it with the knowledge of they had to go back and insert all these shots, this is when I'm like, oh, okay. This is like a close-up.
That,
like,
makes sense.
Like you said, Krause, this might be green screen. You know, I don't know, but anyway. We see her here, so it's established. Now, you know, and they could, if they really wanted to, because if they were having trouble getting the actress, because it sounded like they were, technically, they could have done the whole episode without her, because she just could have chosen not to go back to her original form. So
that's true.
You know, in the first season of The Flash, where there's the shapeshifter, I call him Changeling because I'm like a Star Trek fan, but you know, the shapeshifter, and he shapeshifts
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So much he kind of forgets who he is and loses his identity. I thought
yeah.
That was a really, and I believe his name is called Hannibal Bates, which is pretty on the nose for a serial killer, I might add. That's a real comic book character. I think he's called No Man or something like that. I don't know. Some stupid
Hannibal
comic
Bates.
Book. That's his name. That's like having a one
I
called
I never thought about that until you just pointed that out. Yeah,
it's
that
like,
is a little too on the nose.
Cisco, we have a new serial killer, Freddie Myers. It's a new meta. Oh man. Anyway, how someone did not like say, "Hey, wait, too referential." Yeah, too referential.
We need to pull back on this a little bit, guys.
That's a cool thing about shapeshifters that I hadn't really thought of before. I hadn't noticed. I hadn't really seen before. The Flash did. Like, where, like, they can't even remember what their true form is. You see a little bit about that, like with Sylar in season 4 of Heroes, where he becomes a shapeshifter.
Oh yeah.
He's like going back and forth between like him and his mom and talking to her. Talk about Norman Bates, right? Just weird stuff. Cool stuff. High concept stuff that has no place in this episode, really.
Yeah, but I feel like Star Trek did that. Even Fringe. I think Fringe did that at one point.
With shapeshifters, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to shapeshifters than, oh, they could be anyone. Who are they going to be next? And that's kind of the approach we take as this episode continues on from here. They like pulling that switcheroo on us here.
Definitely.
Clark goes to the Torch, and he tells Chloe and Pete about his theory that Whitney is really Tina Greer. And they said, that's impossible, Clark, because Tina Greer committed suicide last week. And she was in a mental institution, and she went into like the art therapy room, doused herself in paint thinner, set it all on fire. And then what Chloe does here, she pulls out like a headline that she was writing. Right? And it's like, yeah, as if this would be the front page article of a school newspaper about this ex-student who committed suicide. Are you kidding? Like, we couldn't even print, when I was in high school on the paper, we couldn't even print losing football scores. Right? So the story is Tina burned herself to death, said she didn't know who she was anymore, which, you know, was what I was saying with the whole Hannibal Bates character, that's maybe kind of what they were going for there. I don't know. But
yeah.
Two things on this. One, how did she fake this death, right? Because there would have to be a second person in the room, right? If she locked herself in a room. Two, like, how do they identify the body? Because, like, she's a shapeshifter, but the person she replaced herself with isn't. So it's not like she it's not like she turned the other person into Tina Greer. That's what was cool about Sylar in season 4 of Heroes. And I rarely praise Heroes post season 1, but I'll give him some praise here. When Sylar wants the world to think he's dead, he like tricks the shapeshifter to shapeshift into himself and then kills him. So then there's a dead body.
Yeah, there's
a dead body of Sylar, and people are like, "Oh, Sylar's dead." That's being smart, but anyway, the whole I just felt like that was really unnecessary. Why did she really have to be dead? Why couldn't they just said she escaped? You know, like, oh, she escaped a week ago. I'm like, oh, okay, well then it all ties together. Like, she saw the headline that Whitney was missing in action. It's kind of like what this is like my favorite comedy. I'm gonna try to reference this as much as possible now. Ace Ventura, right? It's when when Ray Finkel goes missing, or no, what is it? It's
Ray Finkel, yeah,
Einhorn
laces out.
Yeah, I laces out. It's when what's her name? I forget her first name, but Einhorn is the police captain. She's a hiker and she goes missing. And then Ray Finkel reads about this in the mental asylum, right? And then decides to change into a woman and assume her identity, right? Finkel is Einhorn.
Einhorn is Finkel.
That's why Roger Predactor is dead. He found Captain Winky. Oh man, I love Ace Ventura. But there's a lot of parallels to this particular plot line. Person in the mental institution breaks out, assumes the identity of a person assumed missing. Anyway, I just think she didn't have to be dead, right? I mean, that's like another layer of exposition that doesn't make sense that you didn't even need. Like, we're sitting here complaining about it, but it's like, if they just said she escaped, it would have been like, oh, okay, she escaped. Fine. Right? I get it.
Yeah. Let's move on.
But anyway, from Clark to Pete later on, he says, I think she might know my secret. And Pete's like, oh, really? He's like, yeah. She used Lana's necklace against me the last time we fought. I had to use my powers to stop her.
Ooh.
And it's like, yeah. See, this is the show taking advantage of the lack of serialized TV we're talking about, Krause. Because you and I did X-Ray together.
Yeah.
That's not what happened at all.
Because, no.
Like, well, she was dressed up as Whitney. Oh, that's why she had the necklace, right? She was going to become Lana. That was her plan in X-Ray, right? So she borrowed the necklace to, you know, everybody knows Lana Lang has her necklace, right? But then she became Whitney to, like, trick Lana and take her identity or something. Clark shows up at the graveyard. Whitney has, you know, quote-unquote Whitney, right, has the necklace and the letter jacket that he takes off to beat up Clark, right?
Yeah.
And so Clark is a little bit weak when he first shows up, and then Whitney throws away the letter jacket, gets the kryptonite far away from Clark enough where it doesn't affect him, and then they start fighting, right? If you had never, if you had forgotten X-ray and had like a vague memory of it, you'd be like, oh yeah, that sounds about right. But no, that's not right. That's not what happened. So, but that's a huge plot of this episode. Like Tina knowing Clark's secret and knowing his weakness plays into this episode big time in a minute here. But I love what Clark says here. He says, when she was declared insane, I figured I didn't have to worry, you know, about her knowing about his powers. It's like, that is a terrible attitude to have, Clark. It's just such a reckless, well, people thought she was crazy just because that doesn't, just like the woman who thought that she was Clark's mom, right? She saw Clark use his powers. She's going to be like, hey, I broke an axe on this guy. He's weird. You know, if anyone says that, the Luthers, both of them are investigating you or interested in you. Like, that's just a red flag to these people, Clark. You have to be more discreet. Perhaps a secret identity would be...
Get it together, Clark.
Oh, man. Anyway, they're walking down the hallway here, and then Lana pops out of nowhere. It's like, oh, hey, what are you guys talking about? And Clark's like, look, it's very complicated. But I think Whitney's Tina Greer. I'm going to leave P here to protect you or keep an eye out for you.
It's really complicated, but... Yeah, it seems so silly when you rephrase it like that.
Well, that's pretty much what he
said.
What
was she thinking when he told her that?
But the real twist is it's not Lana. It's Tina Greer, because as soon as Clark leaves, Lana proceeds to beat the hell out of Pete, right? She picks him up, throws him into a locker. But Pete's like, you're Tina. Like, he had called her a freak. He's like, we got to keep you safe from that freak. And she's like, who are you calling a freak? Him. I guess that's what sets her off. Because she, like, lifts Pete up. Pretty cool special effect. It's cool to see little Lana pick up Pete like that. Throws him across the hallway head first into a locker. I'm sorry, Pete is dead, guys. Pete is bleeding out. His skull is bleeding out in the middle of a Smallville high school hallway.
Yeah. They should have really used that opportunity to end Pete's character. It would have been better than what they do with him later on. They should have just used that. That was the last.
Oh man,
for Pete.
But why was Tina as Lana at school? Right? Hadn't Clark just left the Forbans house and Whitney was there? And then he turned, I don't know. This is what I'm saying. That they start doing the whole, guess who Tina is now? Now she's Whitney. Now she's Lana.
Yeah.
Now she's Jonathan Kent. Like, that's the game they're playing here. And there was an episode of Arrow. I believe it was season 3. It was the first episode where the Adam, Brandon Rouse Adam, confronts the Green Arrow and Arsenal, his sidekick. And it reminded me of this because, the Atom, he has technology, right? So he has, like, electricity. He shoots at both of them, right? He shoots it at Roy, you know, Arsenal. It knocks him out, throws him across this construction zone they're in. And then Oliver and Ray Palmer, the Atom, and Oliver Queen being the Green Arrow. I'm botching the story, but the gist of it is that the scene ends with Oliver, like, walking off and leaving. And everybody's like, hey, what about Roy? And we don't see him for the rest of the episode. And that's what this is like, because we don't see Pete anymore. Like, we don't see him anymore in this episode. And I'm pretty sure this is not in the Smallville Companion here, but I know Craig Byrne used to write for the, you know, Smallville Ledger, Smallville Torch websites, and I think he had a short little story, and I remember reading it back in the day about how Pete was found, like, the few hours later in the hallway and, like, laughing about it. And he's like, well, I'm just glad it wasn't on a Saturday or, you know, no one found me or something like that. So I like that. You know, I'll have to ask Craig about that next time he's on, because I distinctly remember a story like that, and it's not in the Companion. So I'm really? Sure it was just – because the websites for that are long gone. Like, I'm sure somebody could go find it if they wanted. But anyway, yeah, that's that's how they should have killed off Pete. It's terrible, Krause. Oh, man. Clark goes to the Fordmans, and there's no answer, so he does his Clark Kent thing where he shoots the lock through the door with his finger, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool maneuver there. And he breaks in saves Whitney's mom. And at this point, she realizes that this is not Whitney, which is good, but still, she's still going to be scarred for life. From all this stuff.
Yeah, her son's dead in Indonesia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm,
you know,
sorry.
He's fighting for good cause out there in Indonesia, Krause, you know.
Yeah.
anyway, so we go back to the Talon, and Whitney is there and asks Lana. Well, we're going to just keep calling Whitney. Why is Whitney? Okay, you guys know what we're talking about. So Whitney asks Lana to marry him, which is like, I know I have a marriage count on this show, on my Smallville tally board. I guess I should have had an engagement count, because there's a lot of people asking other people to get married, and they never get married, but...
Yeah.
So what's up with this plan, right? Because what he says here is, he's like, I understand why you didn't want to move in together. Now it'd be legal.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
Because again, Lana is 16, Whitney's 19.
Doesn't change the ages, man.
Is it legal to marry when you're 16? I don't know. I remember in Deep Impact, like, you ever seen Deep Impact? You know what I'm talking about? One of the main young characters married his, like, teenage girlfriend so her family could be saved with his family. His family, I believe her family, the mother was Denise Crosby, Tasha Yar from Next Generation. That's right. So I remember it. So I was like, oh, Denise Crosby, she did do other things after Star Trek. but, like, the paperwork didn't go through and they got killed anyway. I don't know. I don't know why my mind went there, but that's what's fun about these conversations. But you know what the most twisted thing about this, though, is? He's like, my mom was only 16 when she married my dad, and this is her ring. It's like, dude, that is cold-blooded, all right? He has beat up, tied up the mom, and then taken her wedding ring to propose to Lana with it. That is cold-blooded. But she says no, and he's like, why? I don't understand. And then she finally tells him about the video letter where they broke up. Right. And I it's like at this point, I thought that had come up maybe off screen. I don't know. But I thought over the course of this episode, perhaps Lana had told him what was up. I guess she was just not wanting to. She's like, well, I didn't want to. I know you were going through a lot and I didn't want to hurt your feelings. He's like, you should have said that. Right. Because he's under the assumption that they're still a couple. He pivots quickly. He's like, OK, it's fine.
Yes, he does.
It's all good. You know, that's the thing about the military. You learn to adapt. He's like, but, you know, just one thing, if you don't mind. Could I have your necklace? You know, something to remember you by. I know how important it is to you, right? And we get her taken off her necklace. And she's like, oh, of course. And gives it to Whitney. And we get, like, the whole clenching of the fist with the necklace in it. And, like, the whole evil smirk from Whitney, right? So we know what he's going to go do with it, right? So then we cut to the Kent Farm. Jonathan, or so we think, is working on a tractor or something. And Clark comes home. And he's like, oh, Matina, she could be anyone. And Jonathan's like, you got that right. And then we see him approach Clark. I know, right? We see him approach Clark with a necklace and we cut the commercial and we know what happened, right? That was so just on the nose. I had to laugh at that, right? Oh, man. So then we come back for commercial and Tina has thrown Clark in the storm cellar. And he has the necklace around his neck, much like he did in the pilot. Clark is like, I don't understand. Last year you wanted to become Lana. And it's like, yeah, Clark, we don't understand either. What has happened here, right? Because, you know, last time she tried to kill Lana and assume her identity. And she's like, well, that would have been the worst mistake of my life. She rejected me and I acted without thinking. So it's basically, without saying it, it's implied that she's become a lesbian here.
Yeah, does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know. Like that's the problem with them combining these two plot lines, right? I mean, someone, obviously, her becoming a character who comes home who was missing, like, and all that, it made sense, I guess. But this whole thing was...
No, I kind of wish they had planted more seeds to that. Because to me, it kind of felt like it was out of left field.
Well, yeah, it was. Because, I mean, clearly her obsession with Lana has, like, warped her mind. Because she's become a homicidal killer now, right? She has no remorse about, you know, killing the military guy and beating up Wendy's mom and killing whoever else stands in her. She's about to kill Clark here, as far as she knows, right? So, I mean, her obsession with Lana has really warped her identity and sense of self and all this. So, somewhere along the way, she decided she was in love with Lana. And I don't know if I like this character turn. It doesn't make any sense, really, I don't think.
Yeah.
But what it does lead to, okay, because she's figured out who Lana wants to be with, right? And she wants to be with Clark. So, she becomes Clark, right? And Welling is... he excels as evil Clark. He always does, right? He did so much better as evil Clark.
So, no, this is why it reminded me of the episode Red. It's just you got to see bad Clark, but not only did you get to see bad Clark, but you got to see bad Clark actually get into a fisticuff with actual Clark.
That is one of my favorite moments of this episode. This is the first time we get to see, you know, Clark versus Clark, right? That's classic.
Definitely.
But, you know, but before she leaves the storm cellar, right? She's walking up. Well, she's Clark now. Tina's now Clark, right? Evil Clark. I don't know. I don't know how to call her. Tina. We're going to call her Tina from now. We're almost there, folks. It's just this terminology gets really confusing when they keep changing identities, right? So she's walking up the storm cellar. Clark's like, no! We get a shot of him looking up. And if you look, and I didn't notice this until I rewatched it, you know, for the podcast here, but if you look at Welling's belt, he has, like, this white thing on it, and it's clearly, like, the battery for the Kryptonite necklace to give it power, to, you know, for it to glow. So I'm sure that they didn't think we would see that, you know? So if they had only, like, you know, they could have cropped the shot and gotten out of there. It's only a split second. Only keen-eyed nerds like myself noticed it. But anyway, I thought it was interesting, just a little behind the scenes peek of, okay, so that's how they do this. They have some wire that goes down Welling's back and connects to this on his, you know, on his belt. So that's how the necklace glows. So our next scene is, you know, our Lex subplot. Let's not forget about it. He finds Helen at the Talon. So I guess he was having her followed after all, Krause.
He was. Sneaky Pete.
Sneaky Lex. Pete's dead. Remember, don't forget.
all right.
So she finally offers some kind of explanation. Lex is like, hey, I would appreciate some kind of answers, please. She says Lionel offered her money to dump Lex. She claims that she said no, but Lionel wired the money anyway. And you know, Lex doesn't understand why that would happen, and she plays it off as like their complicated family history. And again, self-contained in this episode, it seems to be a lesson in Lex learning how to trust people, right? And you know, I guess it still works because of her ultimate betrayal. Spoilers: it's like, yep, this is what helps create the Lex Luthor of the future, by getting screwed over by all his wives time after time. It seems as if Lex was, you know, in the wrong, and he ultimately learns a lesson and becomes, you know, more trusting and breaks down the walls he built around his soul and his heart, right? But retrospectively, I do choose to see this as the, you know, seeds for Helen's ultimate betrayal down the road, because that is, of all the, like, the ridiculous Smallville plot turns that happened in this show, that is one of them.
Yeah, agreed.
So we cut back to the Storm Cellar, and Clark is, you know, writhing from the pain of the kryptonite. And the ship comes on, right? It's under this tarp, which I'm sure saved them some special effects money. Just have like a glowing glowing light under the tarp, right? We had never seen the ship do anything without the key. So it's like, oh, what's this all about, right? What's it going to do? And it starts glowing, and then it emanates this energy, like its pulse. And it turns the kryptonite into a clear kryptonite. So it neutralizes the kryptonite. Which is like, pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, no, I remember watching this and being like, what the hell's going on with the ship? Like, that was, to me, a mythology, like, that was a trigger. It's like, oh, what are they doing with the ship? Is it going to be able to neutralize all kryptonite in Smallville, or is it just protecting Clark when he's in vicinity of it?
Well, that would have been a really cool, if they hadn't decided to blow up the ship in the end of season two, which was a bad decision, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
That would have been a cool way, like, once he has the key and he figures out how to use the ship to, like, program it to, like you said, like, let's widen this pulse so it neutralizes all the kryptonite in Smallville. That would have been a good way to set up the Superman status quo in the future, where kryptonite is not such a hot commodity, or easy to come by commodity, I should say. Because, you know, what they could have done here is just the simple, like, oh, good thing the Kents came down there and found him just in the nick of time, right? which they kind of almost do, because immediately after the ship heals him, Jonathan comes down and says, oh, Clark, you okay? It's like, you know, that kind of loses the power of him being saved, and like literally 10 seconds later, Jonathan found him, because he wouldn't have been found either way. But I think it makes sense that, you know, Jor-El would have programmed the ship to do this, because apparently the Kryptonians knew about kryptonite, which doesn't make any sense, but Smallville continuity, they did, right? It's been established now as far as the last episode of Skinwalker goes. You know, he would have had it programmed because, you know, when Clark is young, he's vulnerable, so he probably would have programmed the ship to neutralize all kryptonite around it, so to help Clark, you know, not get killed immediately when he got out of a spaceship, right? So, you know, that makes a lot of sense. It fills in some plot holes and creates some other ones, but, you know, it's all good. And this is cool, and this is something we see. At this point, you think, oh, the ship neutralizes kryptonite. That's cool. Because, you know, we've never seen kryptonite by the ship before, so it's not breaking any rules or creating new rules at this point that contradict anything. But down the road, apparently the ship heals things. So that's, that's not for this episode discussion. That's for another episode. But I wish they just would have kept it. Like, the ship, the caves, the fortress, it all becomes like magic. That's the problem I have with it. There's no established, look, I like sci-fi more than fantasy, right? I'm a sci-fi guy. So I like rules to my fiction.
You like more Star Trek than you do Star Wars.
Yeah, well, I mean, Star Wars even more, like, I like Star Trek more than like Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings or anything like that, right? That's fantasy. Anything can happen. That's why it's hard to tell like a ghost story or a wizard story, because literally there are no rules. It's like, well, the ghost can go through walls, or the wizard can create new things. It's like, well, then where's the drama, right? When there's no rules, where's the drama? So that's the problem with all this Kryptonian technology. It becomes more and more like fantastical deus ex machina, right? Literally, here.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally, yeah. No, but I remember when I saw this episode, I thought, like, when the ship did that, I thought, that's some potential for some really cool story ideas in the future.
And the ship lasts about 10 more episodes. So.
Yeah, and they didn't. And, of course, they didn't live up to what I was hoping they would do it.
Yeah, you think the ship that could neutralize kryptonite would have been able to neutralize that kryptonite key. But anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, well. But we digress. Jonathan does find Clark in the cellar here. And like I said, like, that undercuts the whole ship saving him because Jonathan immediately finds
him.
And I feel like it's to spell it out. The only reason they have Jonathan come down here is to spell it out to the audience, because Clark is just standing there looking at the ship and holding the clear necklace. And he's like, the ship, it saved me. It's like, yeah, we get it. But again, they're trying, it's a broadcast TV audience, teenage show in the early 2000s. They feel like they have to spell certain things.
They have stupid audience.
But this is the funniest thing. I know somebody, and I'm sorry, I forget who tweeted about this, and I retweeted, and I thought it was hilarious. They tweeted this particular moment with the caption, and it's Clark, and he turns to Jonathan, and he says, my God, I have to save Lana. It's like, whoever said that on Twitter was like, the plot of every Smallville episode. it's been distilled down into that one line, right?
So true.
But, you know, Lana is closing up the Talon, and Tina, as Clark, has arrived to put the moves on her, right? And she, you know, to Lana's credit, she's like, everyone's acting very strange today. Because earlier, Chloe, who was Tina, had snuck into her room, was like smelling her clothes. And it was a very awkward scene. Again, the whole like, Tina likes girls now is played for laughs. And it's very just, you would not see this on today on the CW. No. That's what I'm saying.
No, you
so
wouldn't.
I don't know how they should have approached it. They probably just shouldn't have approached it if this is the angle they were going to take with it. But anyway, that was an awkward scene. So Lana, I mean, she's had weird interactions with Whitney. She's had weird interactions with Chloe. Then good Clark shows up, and we have this is classic. I mean, this used to happen on Star Trek all the time, like two Captain Kirks, right? We get two Supermans. We get two Clarks, good Clark and bad Clark. And then it's the classic, well, who's the real one, right? And then Tina Clark is kind of, you know, she's quick on her feet. She's like, it's okay, Lana. I'll explain everything when I get you away from Tina. And she's like, Tina? Because remember, the fake Lana had heard that it was Tina. The real Lana has no idea. She's been working at the Talon all day, like, right. Like a good high school student, not at school. Clark's like, no, that's Tina. and then there's, you know, no, I'm the one. No, I'm the one. And then finally, the gratuitous pipe-fixing scene actually plays a role here. Because Clark's like, I'm Clark, the guy who fixed the leaky pipe. And it's like, yes,
oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Why don't people say stuff like that in these situations in other shows? Like, good job, Smallville. You know, it's like, hey, I saw you an hour ago. We experienced a thing that I know only you and I know about. Let me tell you about it. It's really me. So then Lana's like, get away from me, you freak. And then Tina's like, ruined everything. And throws Lana across the room. And this is a plus one for the KOs to keep Clark secret. Because it looks like Lana hits that pillar pretty hard. And I believe, you know, if she was still awake, she would have come outside to see what's going on between the Clarks and seen Clark's power. So I feel like she got knocked down here. So I'm adding a plus one to the tally board. So I like you said earlier, Krause, this is Clark versus Clark. I love this. It's like Superman 3 style, right?
It is. But now that you mention it, that was the Lana scene. She definitely, the writing of it could have been a little bit better. But it was fun seeing Clark versus Clark and tumbling versus tumbling.
Yeah, I mean, I used to like, obviously, listen to me. Like, obviously, I used to tape the show on VHS. Well, I did. I used to, you know, record these on VHS, and I wouldn't rewatch episodes that much. But I remember like I would rewatch like certain moments from episodes, right? And this scene here is one I would always like rewind and rewatch more than once because it was like such a cool scene. This is the first time you've seen Clark versus Clark on Smallville, and it's a big moment, right? Because that's classic sci-fi. It's classic Superman, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say this. You know, I think the Clark, I still really enjoy the Superman versus Clark fight in Superman 3 in the junkyard, don't you?
I do. It's one of my favorite scenes. As I said, the last podcast for Red. But even the Smallville scene, it was still cool seeing Tom Welling play the evil.
He's always
Clark.
Better. He's always better, isn't he?
It's more fun to play the bad guy, as they always say. No, I enjoyed it, and I kind of wish that they did more of it.
Yeah, I mean, as the show goes on, we get Bizarro, we get, you know, Black Kryptonite, we get, you know, different versions of Clark and, you know, Earth 2 Clark and all that, but it's a long time before we get another Clark versus Clark battle like this, so. So, yeah, this line always made me laugh, because, again, this is Clark, right? He doesn't talk this way, but Tina's Clark says, I'm going to kick your ass, Kent. I love this. And so, you know, and this Tina's a rare freak of the week that can hold her own with Clark, because, you know, she has super strength, because, you know, as we talk about in X-ray, they're banging themselves into tombstones and stuff in that episode, so it's pretty cool. And so they really throw down here. You know, Clark doesn't have to, like, you know, it's not the classic, I'm going to throw you 20 feet and knock you out and the fight's over, right? We can actually have some punches back and forth. And they crash through a greenhouse, you know. So there's cool set pieces here, right? And then there's like a, I guess what, like an engine in the back of a truck that I think Tina picks up, right? And then once Clark remembers he has other powers than just strength, he wins the fight because he super speeds out of Tina's way because she's about to crush this engine on top of him. And she's running so fast, the momentum carries her into the broken greenhouse. And then she's impaled by this pike, which is... You know, we were talking about how the military officer being killed by the bat was a little gruesome. This is extremely gruesome. This is stuff you see like in Excalibur, where Mordred like is like on the on the pike, you know, pulling himself.
That's like a Halloween. That was a Halloween kill move in one of the like the one with the 96 with Paul Rudd.
That was a kill move. Doesn't he kill someone with a shotgun and then impales them with the shotgun? Oh my god!
Yes.
So, rated R movie from the mid-90s, 7 p.m. Central WB show 2003. How our standards have changed, right? Because that's pretty gruesome. Like, you see, like, Clark, like, you know, Tina Clark, like, coughing up blood, and it's like, oh, my gosh.
I love how Clark's like, well, what are you going to do? Guess you got to go home.
I love that, too. Like, it's like a two-shot. We see the close-up of, like, Tina, and then she's like, take care of Lana, and she dies. Yeah. And behind her is Clark, right? And he's so non-phased. But I guess if you were Clark at this point, you've seen it all, right? Yeah, I mean, you're sure. Like, oh, well, another.
Sure.
And so I'm going to count this as a plus one to a Smallville High School student death, because if she hadn't gone crazy, she would have still been in Smallville High School, and she was a student last episode. So I'm going to count this, you know?
No, you should.
As I should. So.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad we're in agreement on that.
Yes, definitely.
But yeah, I mean, hey, her last words were "Take care, Lana." So her heart was in the right place. Well, I don't know. After that, pike went through her chest. I don't know, but hey-o. We have a serious shift in tone here because Clark and Jonathan come home to Martha, and they say that they had visited Whitney's mom in the hospital, and she's pretty shaken up. But it turns out that the officer that Tina had killed had come to tell Whitney's mom that Whitney had died in action. They found his body. So he really was dead, you know? So now it's like, whoa, okay. Wow, I didn't expect that, you know, me watching it at the time. And then this is a good moment here where Clark ponders, like, if he would have been brave enough to, like, give his life for his country, you know, that
yes.
Whitney had, you know, Whitney didn't have powers, and he put himself out there, and Clark ponders this. And this is this good early Superman stuff that makes the show so great, huh?
No, I love the fact that Clark had that moment where he realizes that a hero can sacrifice things like his life and actually make an impact on those that he longs to serve. And I think that was great that he kind of took Whitney's sacrifice, like a lot of us can do with soldiers that we come across in the media and whatnot. A life sacrifice for the purpose of others is more meaningful than doing, you know, nothing by yourself. And I thought that was great that Clark realized that from Whitney's sacrifice. And I kind of wish that they did more with that. That's kind of what, like, I wish that Whitney's character was a little bit more fleshed out in the season two than this just one-off episode, because I feel like they kind of rushed it. But at the same time, I think it builds a lot of character for Clark, like, you know, realizing that sacrifice goes a lot in the long run. You can do a lot with it.
Yeah, and this closes out kind of like a chapter of Smallville, the whole Whitney. That whole chapter is closed now. The kryptonite necklace is, you know, neutralized, so it's no longer a thing now. So, you know, these things that were big things in season one are no longer part of the show. And it's just part of the show, you know, moving on, moving forward. And, you know, this is back when they thought they were going to get like 5 seasons if they were lucky. Right. If they knew the show was going to go 10 years, they might have slowed this down a little bit, right? And mine more from the Whitney character, because you're right. I mean, you could do a lot with, like, you know, a guy you know who goes off to join the military, but they don't. And this is it.
Well, I like how they go from the beginning of the episode. He's pretty much like, hey, this is a single girl. She's cute. I'm going to try to move in on her. Her boyfriend's gone out of the picture. And by the end of it, he's kind of like, you know what? He left for something more noble than what I'm doing. Maybe there's something I can learn from it.
That's true. Clark doesn't get his act together until, like, what, season 8?
Right. Yeah, man. 6 years later.
Gosh. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, man. But then we come back to our Lex plot, which doesn't quite organically fit into this episode. There's a lot of instances in Smallville where Lex has a subplot, and sometimes it, like, works into the greater whole, and other times it doesn't. This time it really doesn't, other than the whole people are seldom what they appear to be line. Yeah. It doesn't really fit, but Lex has gone to the hospital to see Helen. Now, this does not count as a hospital visit. I only count those when someone, like, is admitted to the hospital as a patient, okay? Because, you know, we got doctors. We're going to have doctors and paramedics be characters on the show moving forward. So that would be unfair of me to count that. So, but they're still getting good use out of that hospital set, right? They're like, okay. I feel like this is what happened. They built this hospital set, I believe, at the end of season one. Because in the first few episodes where people go to the hospital, it always looks different. There's no continuity, right? But then when they officially build their Smallville hospital set, they thought, okay, we're gonna use this set. We need a new girlfriend for Lex. She's gonna be a doctor. She's gonna be a doctor, and Lex is gonna go visit there all the time.
Yeah, we need to get our money out of this set.
But you know, I'll tell you who could have used the trip to the hospital this week: Krause Pete.
Oh my God, you're right.
He has some serious. He didn't get brain damage before. Yeah. Oh, man. No wonder Pete makes some questionable decisions moving forward with all this. Oh, poor guy. But anyway, the point of this scene, truly, is for Lex to come apologize to Helen. And in order to do so, he pulls out the dead mom card, which is a strong play.
Yeah.
But it gets the job done, right? So Lex knows when to play that dead mom card. Because he's like, well, my mother died. You know what's coming, right? He's going to tell a sob story. He's like, I used to build a wall around my heart and... which each year the wall got taller and more fortified. This is a good monologue. I wonder if he practiced this before he came to see Helen. I feel like the Luthers can just wing this kind of stuff. But it's a good speech, and it wins her over. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I feel like Lex, you know, I miss the Lex from season one where he's like, you know, when Victoria betrays him, and she's like, we could have been great together. And he's like, I plan on being great all by myself, right? Like, that's the Lex Luthor right. I like. You know, he uses people. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I like that, like, as a person, I'm saying I like that as the main villain of Superman's story, okay?
No, definitely.
So that's the thing. Lex becomes kind of a lovesick puppy dog in several seasons here. And look, girls can screw you up. We know this, Chris.
Yes. Yes, we do.
So you can relate to that with Lex in some degrees, but, you know, this is young Lex, so I'm going to, much like James Bond was burned by Vesper, which turned him into the womanizer that he is, these kind of experiences, no, I'm serious here, these kind of experiences burn Lex to make him, like, a, you know, objectifier of people and women that he becomes in his later life as the established Lex Luthor that we know. Like, Lex Luthor and Lois and Clark, right? He has a line once to a woman who was, like, a, you know, he had a fling with her, right? And she's trying to get back with him. He tells her, you were an itch, you've been scratched. I was like... Mic drop, man.
you're opening my mind by comparing Lex Luthor to James Bond, man. It's like you're blowing my mind here.
Open your mind. Some Total Recall. It's a good movie. Probably Arnold's second best movie after Terminator, Terminator 2. I'm just anyway, but moving
Terminator
on.
Terminator 2. Yeah, go on.
So Helen takes his hand and they walk off to live happily ever after for the rest of this season anyway. Until it all comes crashing down quite literally. But then we start to hear the first strings of Mad World by Gary Jules, right?
Oh, yeah.
So which version of Mad World do you like better, the Gary Jules version or the Tears for Fears version?
Oh, the Gary Jules, but that's because of Donnie Darko.
Absolutely. Correct answer, Krause. Have you seen Donnie Darko?
I love Donnie Darko.
You know, I've never seen Donnie Darko.
What?
I know, right?
Really?
Yeah. Do you have it on, like, DVD or Blu-ray?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll have to buy it now. I have source code right now, so I need to watch that from you. Give it back to you. Yeah.
Well, I can let you borrow Donnie Darko and Daredevil.
Director's Cut. Yeah, thank you. So I gave you guys know Krause here. You know DeMonte. They both been on the podcast. These guys hate Ben Affleck. They hate Daredevil. You know. So I said, no, guys. No. Listen, here we go.
Go ahead.
I said, no. You need to watch the Director's Cut of Daredevil. I have it on DVD. It's really good. Check it out. And I don't know which one you guys lent it to, but somewhere along the way it got lost.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I bought two editions of it. But by the time I told you I bought it, you had already bought yourself one. So
now you own it?
Now got like four versions of the director's edition.
Well, first of all, keep one, watch it for yourself. Let me know what you think.
Oh, no, I have. It's great.
It's great. You heard it here first, folks. Krause says it's great. It's better than Batman v Superman. Am I right?
Definitely. Yep.
Man, who would have thought that? And then the other one you need to give to DeMonte to give it his Halloween on Christmas party. Because we just had it. You saw the picture I posted. DeMonte is the guy dressed up very loosely dressed up as the Riddler, I might add, behind me in my picture as Superman at his Halloween on Christmas party. His prizes this year were garbage. I got some used Batman socks, okay? So you need to give him that DVD to give away next year at his party, okay? Enough about my personal life. You guys are like, I know enough about you now, Zach. I'm here to listen about Smallville. Well, let's continue. So Gary Jules, Mad World. So yeah, awesome song. This is probably one of the most mainstream songs Smallville ever uses. They could have used it a lot, actually. Like, I feel like there's a lot of other episodes this could have fit in just as well, if not better. Like, in the episode Shattered, where Lex is in the mental institution. Now, yeah. I love Johnny Cash's Hurt, originally by Nine Inch Nails, which is insane that Johnny Cash covered a Nine Inch Nails song. So it works great there, but this song also would have worked really good there. But anyway, all that to say, this is a great song. The proud tradition of Smallville, you know, ending episodes with great songs. And we go from the hospital here to Clark in the cave with a clear kryptonite necklace. He's just in the cave. Again, probably just because they want to show off the new set. They're like, okay, we spent so much money on this stupid set. Can we have a scene there? So, you know, this should probably been at the, in the loft, but whatever. I complain about reusing sets, and I say this scene should have been in the loft. Listen to me. What a hypocrite. But, Clark's checking out the cave paintings, and he hears somebody coming, so he puts the clear kryptonite necklace in his pocket. So it's established that Clark has it. I don't really recall, maybe in, like, season 6, where Lana finds out a secret, maybe he gives her the necklace back. I know we see it in a flash forward to Lana's potential death and hereafter as she wears it as an old woman, so.
Oh, really?
I don't know. You know what? Ironically, Lana gets the superpower to suck the kryptonite out of things, right? Wow, well, I didn't even realize that until just now. So she becomes the ship, basically. anyway, all that to say, man, we were just stretching this out, aren't we, Cross? Lana is understandably upset. She questions even having sent Whitney the Dear John letter, which is good. You know, this is a real good scene for Kristen Kreuk. I think she really plays, like, crying and upset very well. She did in Skinwalker. Yeah. She does here. I really buy the fact that she's distraught here, don't you?
No, yeah, believable, and she did a great job.
And, you know, Lana apologizes to Clark for all her questions about him because she says she starts listing off the people. You know, everyone I ever gotten close to leaves. You know, is it her parents, then Nell, and then Whitney. And this is the only time you really address the fact that Nell pretty much, she didn't abandon her, but she was like, yeah, peace out. I got a fiance now.
Yeah. See you later.
You know, this kind of reframes Clark and Lana's relationship. Like, because, you know, I give the show a lot of crap for, like, Lana ever talking to Clark again after Red. You know?
Yeah.
And then all the other, you know, things that he questions or she questions him about, like the tornado, where she's like, hey, Clark, I saw you save my life. No, you're crazy. You're crazy, girl. How about me? So I feel like, okay, all this is like washed all that away. Now we're at ground zero again. Like, we're going to be cool moving forward. She's like, it's okay that I don't know every secret of your life, which is the right attitude to have, I might add. But anyway, they hug, and it's a good scene here. Like, I'm kind of back on board the Clark and Lana bandwagon here. I've been off of it for a while, and this scene kind of like, okay, this is good. This is a good moment Definitely. Between them, like, as people, not just as, like, Clark pining after Lana kind of thing, you know?
Definitely.
That is the end of the episode. That is Visage.
How's Mrs. Fordman?
The military officer that Tina murdered was coming to tell Mrs. Fordman that they had found Whitney's body. Whitney died in combat.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's horrible. Yeah. Clark? Have you seen Lana?
Chloe said she's not ready to see anyone yet.
Sweetheart, are you all right?
I just can't help thinking that Whitney's skin wasn't bulletproof. His bones weren't unbreakable, but he still put himself in harm's way so the world could be safer. I wonder if I didn't have my abilities, if I'd have that same kind of courage.
Son, there is no doubt in our minds that you would.
Visage got an 8.3. out of 10 on IMDb, which really? I think is probably fair. You know, we'll get into it here in a minute, Cross, you and I. But I know that Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage, he gave this episode a 4 out of 5. So he said, good show with a few inconsistencies. So, you know, I just me here. I, looking back on this episode, like I was saying earlier, this is one of the most fondly remembered episodes of Smallville there is for me, just based off like the in jokes that I have with my friends and
Right.
And then, of course, you know,
the callbacks.
Yeah, big Superman moments. The spaceship turning on, Clark versus Clark, you know, a returning freak of the week, which was a big deal. You know, these are cool things in the series that we didn't see very often up to this point. But looking back on it, I don't know if it holds up quite as well as I remember.
Exactly.
So what are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are I feel like when I first saw it, I loved it. But watching it now, knowing how the series evolves and just kind of remembering how my life was then, I give it a C. I feel like when I first saw it, I gave it a much higher grade. But now that like I look back on it and I look at how the Whitney character, nothing really other than, you know, a little bit part later on.
Right.
Nothing really happened with it. I don't know. And especially now knowing like how, like, you know, the Iraq War happened just shortly after it aired. I don't know. I feel like they missed
really,
an opportunity.
That really bothers you, doesn't it? You bring that up.
No, I just, I don't know. It's not their fault, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to judge this off of the new shows. Like, we were talking about, you know, the Tommy Merlins, the
exactly
Eddie Thons.
No, you're right.
It's kind of not fair to do that, but, you know.
No, you're right. C plus.
C plus, okay.
What do you give it?
I'm glad that I convinced you to add the plus on there. That's... Like, when I sat down to watch this, like, oh, man, Visage, man, I can't wait for this one. And I was expecting to give it somewhere in the A range, and... I don't know. I was gonna give it a B, but now you're like talking me down to B minus because you're.
Well, but I mean, like if you didn't see the other episodes like X-Ray or Red, would you really think that this was that great of an episode for Smallville?
Well, I don't know, man. The Clark on Clark is a powerful thing, you know, because, you know, I mean,
that is true.
We're always complaining about Clark throwing somebody 20 feet and it's over, and you actually had a real fight here. You know,
that's true.
So that's big. The spaceship is big. You know, the continuity. I mean, they bought some continuity, but the continuity, I guess, was kind of a wash, right? You bring back some old characters, but you kind of mess up like their motivations. So it's kind of a wash. So, you know, offset, as the referees say in the NFL, offset. Just pure enjoyment, and personally, all the nostalgic value for me, I'm going to stick with a B for me, a solid B episode of Smallville. So, and then, you know, for Whitney, like, you know, we've talked about it a lot already. It is sad to see this is how, you know, almost, like I said, there's a little bit part in season four, but I'm glad they brought him back for that bit part in season four, because, you know, for a long time we thought, oh, this is going to be the last time we see Whitney, the last time we see Eric Johnson play this character on the show, and it would have been as someone else, as a villain. That seems like it would have been really bad. And it reminded me in season five, you know, Jonathan died. Spoilers. Jonathan died in season five in the 100th episode. Even more specific spoilers. Like his key. And then Brainiac impersonates him in the season finale, you know, and or the penultimate episode. And I thought, man, that's going to be the last time we see John Schneider or Jonathan Kent as Brainiac impersonating him as a villain. Is that how I really want my last memory of this character to be? And for 4 years, that was the case, right? And then Jonathan Kent did come back, and I don't really know how, like his ghost dad in season 10.
Well, you're going beyond what I know of Smallville at this point.
Well, so that's why you're going to be on this journey with this Krause. It's not about the destination. It's about the journey. But anyway, I'm glad they brought him back in that capacity. So he really was Jonathan Kent and not like an imposter. Cause that felt wrong to me in both cases. And that's what it reminded me of for a long time. I thought, man, that's the last time I see Whitney. It's Tina Greer. Weird.
Can I say one thing though? This episode, I thought the stuff that Annette O'Toole did, even though she had such a small bit, her acting skills, her acting chops really showed off, because she had such a small bit, but she sold it so well that she was worried about Clark and, you know, worried about what the hell's going on with this Whitney character that's supposed to be dead and whatnot. I thought she did a really great job in this small role in this episode.
Yeah, you know, Martha, she had a small role here, but she really has a huge role next week in Insurgent. That's probably her best episode of the entire series, you know. So yeah, even Annette O'Toole's great and everything she does, and she always elevates the material, and I absolutely see what you're talking about here. Even in the bit parts, you know, you're like, I mean, she really sells the concerned mother thing. And that's
right.
What is Martha Kent if not a concerned mother?
Right? Yeah.
But no, good call outs there. So a C plus for you and a B for me. So our last order of business here, Krause, is the tally board, series tally board.
Ooh.
It's not new. I'm doing it every week.
No, I know, but I'm still intrigued by it.
So we have a plus one for the blue shirt, red jacket. That brings us to four. We have a plus one for knockouts to keep Clark secret. That brings us to 12. That is, of course, Lana being knocked out. Pete was knocked out, but not to keep Clark secret. And Pete did not go to the hospital, so we don't get that. So that could have been so many tally. He could have had amnesia. That could have been so many tally boards from Pete. But yes. We didn't get anything from it. Again, that's a plus one for Lana being knocked out at the end. That brings us to 12. So she didn't go out and see Clark fighting, you know, fake Clark out there. We have a plus one for Smallville High School student death, because Tina Greer was a Smallville High School student. She would have been had she not gone crazy and put in a mental institution. So I'm going to count that as a Smallville High School student death, and that brings us to 5 so far. And then finally, we have our Bechdel test, and that is going to be a fail, I think, Krause. I don't remember any. Yeah. Like, we had that really unsettling scene between Tina as Chloe and Lana, where she smells her. And then we had the real Chloe and Lana talk about if Lana was, you know, gonna like Whitney again, and that was it. So Bechdel test fail. So I mean, that was a fun one. As I said many times, this was one of my favorite episodes of the show back in the day, and it still is, even though it's, you know, it doesn't quite live up to my memories.
No. But the fun part of watching this, though, is for me, my favorite seasons are season 3 and 4. And so
season 3 and 4? 4?
I know. You
Are you one of the season 4 people?
This is why I can't wait for you to get there. Because those were my most fondest memories of Smallville, okay, season 3 and 4.
We'll talk about season 4. We'll definitely get you on some good episodes then. I can't.
Okay.
So everyone loves season 4. Season 4 is basically just me having people on defending these episodes from me, I guess. I had no idea season 4 was such a fan favorite. But no, that's cool. That's cool. No, I love that. Well, cool, man. No, it's always fun talking about these. And it's all about the nostalgia, right? That's what it's all about. That's why we're doing this.
You're right. Yeah.
This was my childhood. This was our youth, right?
Yeah. And this brought back a lot of good memories. I'm glad that you had me on for this episode, because this kind of brought me back.
We can reminisce about all that good stuff. Where we were back in 2003 and what war was going on, which is apparently what you're most concerned about. So speaking of, if people want to see your tweets about, you know, the Iraq war and things of that nature, Krause, where can they find you on the internet, man?
I'm on Twitter. I'm on the username Papakin, PAPAKIN.
All right, and as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. And as for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. We can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. You can send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. And also, you can leave us a review on iTunes. Please do. Krause, have you left us a review on iTunes yet?
I have not.
I guess, I mean, is that bad to have my guest host leave reviews? I don't know. But hey, it's all good. So why don't you go leave us a review?
I'll change that. Yeah, I'll go do that right now.
Talk about how much you love season 4, and we'll read it on our next Smallville Mailbag episode. So, because everybody loves season 4. Oh, man, good stuff, good stuff. Well, anyway, Krause, fun as always, man. I look forward to having back you on. I think this is actually your last episode this season, so you'll be back in season 3.
I look forward to it. I thank you for including me.
Absolutely, Krause. For sure. And we'll be back next week talking about Insurgents. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.
Children waiting for the day they feel good. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. And to feel the way that every child should. Sit and listen. Sit and very nervous. No one knew me. No one knew me. Hello, teacher, tell me what's my lesson. Look right through me. Look right through me. And I find it kind of funny. I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you. I find it hard to take. it's a very, very bad.